الحمد لله رب العالمين، صلى الله وسلم على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين. I ask Allah to grant us all the sincere intentions. Let us continue talking about the meaning of the two testifications. The author said, among what one must know, believe in, and utter immediately if one was a blasphemer, is the testification of faith, which is, I testify that no one is God except Allah, and that Muhammad is the messenger of Allah. In the prayer, the Muslim must say the testification of faith in Arabic by saying, أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وأشهد أن محمد رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم. The explanation: the first obligation, if one is not a Muslim, is to believe firmly that there is no God except Allah and that Muhammad is the messenger of Allah, and to utter the testification of faith. Anyone who fulfills that, who believes that there is no God but Allah and that Muhammad is the messenger of Allah, and he utters that, becomes a Muslim and a believer. It is not enough for him to utter the first testification, that is, no one is God but Allah, without uttering the second one, that is, Muhammad is the messenger of Allah. Even if he believes in his heart that Muhammad is the messenger of Allah, he needs to utter the two testifications, that no one is God but Allah and that Muhammad is the messenger of Allah. After doing that, he does not become a perfect Muslim or a perfect believer, except by doing the obligatory matters and refraining from sins. This is so because the belief increases and decreases. It increases with doing acts of obedience and decreases with doing sins, committing sins. Of course, there is a minimum that the person has to carry in his heart all the time. And if this minimum level of belief is absent, then one becomes a blasphemer, which means one has to believe in Allah and the Prophet عليه الصلاة والسلام. Now this belief gets stronger by doing good things. And then if one does make sins, then it gets weaker. But if it reaches the level of hesitation, whether this is correct or not, then one becomes a blasphemer. We are not talking about this. We are talking about the belief of a believer to increase and decrease. It gets stronger and it gets weaker. This is why one should be keen to increase his belief, to make his belief stronger by doing good things, acts of worship, and avoiding sinning. Now, after uttering ash-shahadatayn, is it an obligation upon one to utter ash-shahadatayn again? There is difference in opinions among the scholars about this matter. The Shafi'is, Hanafis, and Hanbalis, they say one must utter ash-shahadatayn in every prayer. As for the Malikis, they say it is not an obligation. For the Shafi'is, uttering ash-shahadatayn in the prayer is an integral among the integrals of the prayer. If one does not utter al-shahadatayn in the prayer, then his prayer is invalid. Likewise for the Hanbalis. The Hanafis, they say, it is an obligation, but it is not an integral. Meaning that if one does not utter al-shahadatayn intentionally, his prayer is valid, but he commits a sin by leaving out uttering al-shahadatayn. As for the Malikis, they say it is not an obligation. Even if one does not recite at-tashahud al-akhir, the last tashahud, all of it, one is not sinful. They say this is a sunnah, it's not an obligation. So according to them, if one lifts his forehead from a sujood, sits for a moment, like enough to say assalamu alaykum, then say, if one says then assalamu alaykum, his prayer is valid, even without saying anything. This is the school of Malik. Moreover, uttering the two testifications of faith can take place to become a Muslim, that is. It can take place with the Arabic language or with any other language. So if one says it in English, in Turkish, in Persian, in any other language, it is valid, as long as it carries the same meaning. If one cannot pronounce the term Allah properly, you know, some people, they might have some difficulties with pronouncing the ha, the sound ha at the end of the word. So they might not be able to say illallah. So he might not be able to say there is no God but Allah. The term Allah, he might not be able to say it properly. So we tell him, mention the name of Allah in your language. It is valid. Allah in Arabic, God in English, Khuda in Persian, Dieu in the French language. All those names are names of Allah. So one can mention any of those names in the testification of faith to embrace Islam. It is not a condition to mention the term Ashhad in Arabic. That is, if he says La ilaha illallah Muhammadur Rasulullah, this is enough. He does not have to say Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. But saying Ashhad is better, because it has the meaning of A'lam, I know, I believe, and I testify. By saying Ashhad in Arabic, it contains those three meanings. It is not enough for one to say, I know that there is no God but Allah, to embrace Islam. Because one might know about something and still he might not believe in it. Knowing does not mean believing. In the past, as in the present tense, there are people who knew about that Muhammad was the messenger of Allah, and despite that, they did not believe in that. And this is why it is not enough to say, I know that there is no God but Allah. Either one says, there is no God but Allah, or I testify that there is no God except Allah. I know is not enough. At-Tirmidhi narrated that at the time of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, two Jewish people came to him. They asked him about nine matters that were mentioned in the rules revealed to Prophet Musa. They knew that the Arabs at the time did not know about those nine issues. Which means, if you are a prophet, go ahead, tell us about those nine issues. The Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam told them about those nine issues. So they said, we testify that you are a prophet. They kissed his hand and his foot, but still they did not believe. They did not embrace al-Islam. The Prophet told them, then why you don't follow me? Why don't you embrace al-Islam? You know that I'm a prophet. Then why don't you embrace al-Islam? They said, we are worried that the Jews would kill us if we do that. And we know that Prophet David made a supplication to Allah that always there will be a prophet among his offsprings, which means you are not among the offsprings of David. And this wasn't correct. Dawood, Prophet Dawood didn't make such a supplication. This is what they said. They knew that he was a prophet, but they did not believe in him. This is why the scholars said it is not enough to say, I know, while taking the testification of faith. The author said, the meaning of Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah is I know, believe, and declare that nothing deserves to be worshipped except Allah. The scholars said that no one deserves to be worshipped other than Allah. Worship means the ultimate submission, the extreme submission. So no one deserves the extreme submission other than Allah. This is worship. This is the definition of worship. So worship does not mean to obey. Some people did not understand the real meaning of worship. This is why if they see someone obeying another person in a way that does not comply with the rules of the religion, they claim that this person becomes a blasphemer. Why? Because they thought that worship means to obey. So whenever someone obeys other than Allah, they claim that this person worships that person, worships other than Allah. And thus, they claim him as a blasphemer. And this is wrong, of course. The Wahhabis, they have different terms to define worship, and one of them is to obey. So they define worship as to obey. The Wahhabis themselves, they obey the rules that their kings put for them. Although some of those rules, they go against the rules of the religion. So as if they claim themselves blasphemers. For example, in Saudi Arabia, this is where the Wahhabis rule. In Saudi Arabia, if a person, a Muslim, is killed by mistake, then the expiation would be a certain amount of money, the expiation paid to his inheritors. And if the killed person is among the Saudi people, then the expiation is much higher. Or is this the rule revealed to Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam? No. This does not comply with the Islamic rules. But they obey such rules. So as if they claim themselves blasphemers. Anyway, this is not the correct definition of worship. Some people, they defined worship by calling upon or asking for help. This is also wrong. This is why if they hear someone saying, O Muhammad, or O Rasulullah, they claim that this person becomes a blasphemer. Again, this is the claim of the Wahhabis. According to them, if someone calls upon a person who is absent, who is not in the session, or who is dead, then according to them, this person commits blasphemy by that. In all the Islamic countries, Muslims, when they are very happy or when they are in a tight situation, they say, O Muhammad. For the Wahhabis, all those Muslims in all the different countries are blasphemers. for sure this is wrong. We tell them, you don't know the real meaning of worship. We tell the Wahhabis, you claim that calling upon someone who is absent or dead is blasphemy. We tell them why. Either because this is addressing someone who is not present, or because this is asking other than Allah. If you say this is because addressing someone who is not present, then all the Muslims in the prayers, they say, As-salamu alayka ayyuhan nabi. They address the Prophet alayhi salatu wassalam. In the prayer, this is a part of the prayer. Had this been haram, it would have not been a part of the prayer. As-salamu alayka ayyuhan nabi. This is addressed to the Prophet alayhi salatu wassalam, and we say it in every prayer. If you say, no, this is not because of that, this is because it contains asking other than Allah, well, all of us know that if I ask Hajj Abu Taysir to help me with something, this is permissible. Not just that, the Prophet alayhi salatu wassalam encouraged that in the hadith. So there is no ground for what they say. Really, those people did not understand the meaning of worship. Not just that, it's not that they misunderstood the meaning of worship. Moreover, they went to claim everyone other than themselves to be blasphemers. And they said, it is permissible to shed the blood of all the Muslims all around the world, everyone other than them. It is permissible to shed their blood, take their belongings, etc. This is among the worst innovation in this era, the innovation of the Wahhabis. The Wahhabis explicitly mentioned this ill-creed in their books. In one of their books, this is a book authored by the grandson of Muhammad ibn Abdul Wahhab, the one who founded the ill-creed. In his book, he wrote that the people of Egypt are blasphemers. He said because they worship Al-Badawi. Al-Badawi is a righteous Muslim buried in Egypt. People like to go to his grave and make dua there. The Wahhabis consider that blasphemy. So they said the people of Egypt are blasphemers because they worship Ahmad Al-Badawi. The people of Sham, Sham means Syria, Lebanon, Jordan and Palestine. They say the people of Sham are blasphemers because they worship Muhyiddin ibn Arabi. Also, he is a righteous Muslim buried there. The people of Yemen are blasphemers because they worship Ahmad ibn Alwan. The people of Iraq are blasphemers because they worship Sheikh Abdul Qadir al-Jilani. He said, and likewise other Islamic countries. So for him, everyone in all the Islamic countries are blasphemers, except for themselves. So according to them, more than 1 billion Muslims are blasphemers, and those Wahhabis in Najd, which might be 1 million or maybe 2 million, those are the Muslims only. And all, more than 1 billion Muslims among Ahl Sunnah are blasphemers. And this is what they said. Now this statement of theirs, by saying that, as if they are saying the companions of the Prophet are blasphemers. During one of the battles that the companions fought against the apostates, their slogan, the companions' slogan, was Ya Muhammad, which means O Muhammad. So according to the Wahhabis, the companions were blasphemous for saying that. Moreover, النبي, the Prophet عليه الصلاة والسلام, taught one of the companions to say, O Muhammad, to call upon him while he was not in his presence. So as if they are saying also that the Prophet was a blasphemer. May Allah protect us from such an ill statement. Who knows who narrated this hadith, in which it's mentioned that the Prophet عليه الصلاة والسلام, that the Prophet عليه الصلاة والسلام taught a companion to say Ya Muhammad while he was not in his presence. Al-Tabarani narrated it. In which book? In two of his books, Al-Mu'jam al-Kabir and Al-Mu'jam al-Saghir. Who else narrated this hadith? No, not Al-Bukhari. This one. Well, the part in which there is that the Prophet taught that person. Many narrated it. Al-Hakim, who else? Al-Bayhaqi, who else? Who else? Tirmizi. And who else? Tirmizi. And who else? Ibn Majah. And others. Who classified it as Sahih? At-Tabarani. Other than At-Tabarani. Yes, At-Tabarani classified it as Sahih. Al-Hafiz al-Tabarani. Who else? Al-Hafiz al-Munziri. Al-Hafiz al-Haythami. Al-Hakim. Al-Hafiz al-Subki. Who else? Al-Hafiz al-Nawawi. Who else? At-Tirmizi. And others. 16 Hafiz. All of them. They mentioned explicitly that this is a Sahih Hadith. Among them, At-Tirmizi and Al-Hakim. And At-Tabarani also. And the story which we mentioned about the companions is narrated by At-Tabari in his book of history. Also Ibn Kathir in his book of history. Ibn Kathir, although he is the student of Ibn Taymiyyah, he narrated it and he explicitly said that it has a strong chain of narrators. The author said, who is one, Al-Wahid. Allah is one. In Arabic, we say Al-Wahid. This Arabic term, its root has taken from Al-Wahda. And Al-Wahda in Arabic means not to have partners. This is why Al-Wahid means the one without partners. Allah does not have partners, which means nothing resembles Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. The self of Allah does not resemble any other self. The doings of Allah do not resemble any other doings. And the attributes of Allah do not resemble any other attributes. So when we say Al-Wahid about Allah, we do not refer to a number. The number accepts addition, subtraction, etc. But when we say about Allah that He is Al-Wahid, this means He does not have a partner. The author said, Al-Ahad. Among the names of Allah is Al-Ahad. Some scholars said Al-Ahad and Al-Wahid, they have the same meaning. The one that does not have any partner. And some said Al-Ahad means the one that does not accept division, to be divided, because Allah is not a body, so He does not accept division. What accepts to be divided is a body, that is, what has length, width, and depth. Allah does not resemble that. Allah is clear of that. The author said, Al-Awwal, without a beginning, Eternal, Al-Qadim. Those two names of Allah, Al-Awwal and Al-Qadim, they have the same meaning. They both mean that Allah does not have a beginning, which means His existence is not preceded with non-existence. Because the one who exists after a stage of non-existence would be a creation. Because if something is attributed with existence after a state of non-existence, then as far as itself is concerned, it does not necessitate its existence. Just as it does not necessitate its non-existence. And thus, if it is attributed with existence after non-existence, then it is in need for someone who specified it with that. And the one who's in need is created. The author said, Al-Hayy, which means the one attributed with life. This means that Allah is attributed with life, and this attribute does not resemble our attributes. It does not have a beginning. It does not get to an end. It is not a combination of soul and body. It is an attribute that does not resemble our attributes. The author said, Al-Qayyum, Al-Da'im. Those two names of Allah refer to the same meaning. They mean His existence does not come to an end. It is mentally impossible, intellectually impossible, that the existence of God comes to an end. Because the one who accepts intellectually to annihilate, then it is impossible for it to be without a beginning. This is so because the one who accepts intellectually to annihilate after being existing, then as far as itself is concerned, it does not necessitate for it a state of existence, just as it does not necessitate a state of non-existence. So if it comes into existence, or if it exists, then it is in need for someone who specified it with existence. And the one who is in need for someone else is created, and thus has a beginning. Now this is an attribute of Allah, and thus no one other than Allah is attributed with that. No one other than Allah has a similar attribute. If someone says, Paradise does not come to an end, and hellfire does not come to an end, we say yes, but the everlastingness of paradise and hellfire does not resemble the everlastingness of Allah. Paradise remains because Allah willed for it to remain. Allah specified it with that. As for Allah, no one specified Him with anything. Moreover, paradise remains means that a period of time lapses on it, then another period of time lapses on it, then another period of time lapses on it, without an end. For Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, time does not lapse on Him. So the everlastingness of God does not resemble the everlastingness of paradise. Just as all the other attributes of Allah, they do not resemble the attributes of the creation. Is it clear? So hellfire and paradise, as far as themselves are concerned, it is permissible, intellectually it is permissible for them to annihilate. But they do not, because Allah specified them with everlastingness. Allah did not will for them to annihilate. So we believe that hellfire does not come to an end and paradise does not come to an end because Allah told us about that in Al-Quran. Whomever says other than that, what contradicts that, then he is a blasphemer. Whomever says that paradise comes to an end or hellfire comes to an end, then this person is a blasphemer because this person is belying Al-Quran. An example of that is a person called Jahm ibn Safwan. He lived before 1200 years ago. He said that paradise and hellfire both come to an end. The Muslims unanimously claimed him as a blasphemer. Like him, similar to him, is Ahmad ibn Taymiyyah, who lived in the 8th Hijri century. He said that paradise does not come to an end, but hellfire comes to an end. The Muslims also claimed him a blasphemer for that. Ibn Taymiyyah himself, in one of his books, mentioned that the one who claims that paradise and hellfire come to an end is a blasphemer. Then later, he himself said that hellfire comes to an end. وَالْعِيَاذُ بِاللَّهِ تَعَالَى. Okay, let us stop here for now. Allah knows best. If you have questions, go ahead.
Okay, another question. What about for Wahhabiyya, like calling on someone who's not present, what about asking him about using the telephone? They say you can't call on someone who's not present.
Well, I don't know what they are going to say about that. Okay. You know that Abdul Aziz, the great grandfather of those rulers, when he first introduced the car and the phone to that area, many of the Wahhabis who fought with him to rule that area, they revolted against him, saying that using the car is an innovation, using the telephone is an innovation. So he faced a strong revolt against him because of that. I don't know what they are going to say about this. Anyway, Allah yarhamuna. Okay, go ahead.
Ibn Taymiyyah, about hellfire, was it mentioned? Where did he say it?
About what?
That he said hellfire ends.
About hellfire? Ibn Taymiyyah said that hellfire comes to an end. It extinguishes.
No, where did he say that?
He authored a book about that. There is a book authored by him about this issue. He called it اختلاف الصحابة والتابعين في بقاء النار. This is what he called it. In that book he mentioned explicitly that issue. Also his student Ibn al-Qayyim copied it from him. And As-Subki, Al-Hafiz As-Subki, who lived at the same time as Ibn Taymiyyah, he copied that from him. And he judged him as a blasphemer for that, As-Subki. Is it? Call someone wahid?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is permissible. With other than the meaning when it is attributed to Allah.
Barakallahu feek.
Wa feek.